Firstly, I don't need sperm. I'm not such a high fluting presentation. It's on the side. Thank you.
So firstly, I should clear up to thank everyone for coming this evening. For men, anything to get out of doing more work at home for Pesach, I knew it wasn't. Not such a big challenge. I felt there'd be more men, in fact.
Repercussions.
Right? I hear that. My wife said to me, why are you doing this? It's Erev Pesach. I'm Kenai and her are very, very busy juggling multiple jobs and responsibilities. And I said to her, because Rabbi Mumin asked me. That's the MS. And I wish I could say, Mitamida Yos Mikulam. I never had the zechus to actually teach Rabbi Mumin, but I've learned from him both in his own life and being one of his members of the Kol Mechanchim last year. He gave me tests, and I can only say that thank God I didn't teach him, else we'd be allowed to pay back time. So he was very kind to me, and it was actually a very big zechus. And I thank you for the opportunity, and thank you, Rabbi Chafir, for those beautiful words of introduction. I think what you said is correct. None of them win. So you're accurate on that. Thank you. Obviously, we're talking about Pesach this evening. I want to touch on a theme which I think is extremely relevant and viable to all of us, and we're going to bring it home, Bezer Hashem, give a twist to understanding of Pesach and the relevancy to us, not just as individuals, but to our families and to our homes, and how to develop a home that's basically roi for what Pesach is supposed to be. If we take a look in the first source, so there's a couple of psukim, just the background a little bit. The pasuk says, "Dabwel kol adas b'nei kol adas Yisrael lemo be'esel chodesh hazeh b'ichulahem ish seleves avos aselabayis." So we know the Torah instructs us, because Baruch instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to take a seleves of every person, every family had to take a lamb, a sheep to be able to take to the home and to slaughter. Then the pasuk followed a little bit, a few psukim later. The pasuk continues, "V'lachu min adam v'nasto ashtei amzuzois v'lamashkev alabatim ashayochlu ito behem." The pasuk says that you have to take the dam again, something which we are all familiar with, place it on the mezuzah, the two doorposts, and the mashka of the lentil on top, and then you should eat from that korban. And then finally, b'kol elokei mitzrayim esher shvatim ani Hashem, and I will give judgment to all the gods of Egypt. Each one of these psukim, I think, are basic and fundamental, but need more deep understanding. If you take a look at the medrash in the source number 2, The Medrash tells us, we're not going to read the whole thing, but the Medrash says at the beginning, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to slaughter the Korban Pesach, Moshe said back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Olam, Hadavar Hazeh, Heich Ani Yochel Asos, how can I perform this act? How can I go about and execute your plan, your desire, your commandment to have everyone in Klal Yisrael, every home in Klal Yisrael, shech and slaughter the set? Don't you know this is the God of the Egyptian people? But by your life, because Baruch Hu said to Moshe, "Ein Yisrael yoytzi mikan ad sheyishchotu et Elohei Mitzrayim le'eneihem sheodia lahem she'ein Elohim klum." I will not redeem Klal Yisrael. We've gone through the entire Makos. We're now still Ot. We're holding by the very end. And Kadosh Baruch Hu said, all the things that I have done will be for naught. Everything that I'm asking, everything that we've performed, all the miracles, all the suffering, all the decimation of Mitzrayim will all be for nothing. The Jews will live and die in Egypt if you, Moshe Rabbeinu, do not instruct them to perform this action of a slaughter of Islam. So you have to understand, what was the Kadosh Baruch Hu so adamant about this mitzvah? What was it so deep, if we may use that term, in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon, to instruct Moshe, not just to instruct him, but to force him, to compel him, to threaten him? That if this, we know that many times the Kadosh Baruch Hu had in Moshe a conversation, many times Kadosh Baruch Hu gave in to Moshe, Yafa Marta, many times, it wasn't the first conversation, not the first negotiation, and Kadosh Baruch Hu many times conceded. I can't divide you. Right? So Rashi says, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, my name is Eya. Moshe said, I can't say that's too much. Let me just say, Eya, God said, good call. Numerous places. Love Yafa Shabbat. But over here, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, no. No dealings. No negotiation, no discussion. Either you're in or you're out. Why? What was so compelling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon about this particular act? The second part, as we know, the second pasuk told us about the commandment of placing the dam on the mashkaf. Now we know that this commandment played a major center role in the whole Makot B'chayrus. That was, it took the center stage of extracting Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim, because the pasuk says that as A, as we just saw the measures, and B, Hashem Pasachti Abatzeim, I have to have the dam on the homes of the Jewish home in order for me to be possessed to pass over them. Hence the name. It's an interesting thing. So why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu need this? He didn't clearly need a GPS. He did not need to know a mezuzah where Jews live so he can go collecting from them. This wasn't like the Kodesh Baruch Hu needs a simon or a symbol to say, where do the Jewish people live? I need to know. What was so important again? What was behind the tzivoy of placing diamond? If you want a symbol, place the symbol on one doorpost. Why on two mashkas? Why on the mezuzahs? Why on the mashkas? The whole instruction, the whole commandment seems overdramatic, very overdramatic. The question is even deeper if you take a look in source number four. Jump down to source number four, the Rashi on this pasuk. The Rashi says, "V'haya hadam lechem le'ois." The pasuk says the dam should be for you as an ois. Says Rashi, he's bothered by the word lechem, for you, because v'haya ois, it shall be a sign. Who else is going to be a sign for? So Rashi says lechem, lechem le'ois v'lo la'achirim. It should be an ois for you, not for anybody else. So clearly not for Kodesh Baruch Hu either, but not for anybody else. Meaning, therefore, la'ois mikan shalanotnu adam el b'mifnim. The dam was placed on the inside of the home. Who knew that? We always talk about putting the dam on the outside. We always think they put the dam, just like with the mezuzahs, go the dam on one side, dam on the other side. Whoever thinks, when you get the vision, when you talk about this commandment, this mitzvah, this performance, that went on the inside of the home. It just compounds the question. So mamash, what's it for? What's the purpose of putting dam on the inside of you? You want to say there's some cheshbon, whatever it is, because Baruch Hu wants to show a symbol to the world, this is a Jewish home, we're proud of who we are, whatever it is. But to put it on the inside of the home makes even less sense. The third question, the final pasuk, because Baruch Hu says, I'm going to judge all of the gods. That's been done already. That's happened already. The entire Mitzrayim has been destroyed. Have been plundered. There's nothing left. The crops were all killed, all destroyed. Animals were mostly dead. Many, many people died. The economy was shot. It was like, what more are you going to do? So I'm going to show their God who's boss. Like, you took care of the dam already by the yard, Pasuk Rashi says, that he already showed them he could rule over their God, the river, the Nile. So what else the Kodesh Baruch Hu asked him to do? Why is he emphasizing they need to be shevet Elohim to destroy their gods when already the country's dying? They were begging Paro, get rid of them. This was not that he needed to show one more act to convince them who's in charge. So what was the motive behind Kodesh Baruch Hu's desire to show them? And that's when, again, in the Medrash, when Kodesh Baruch Hu was so adamant, the last line he said, I have to show them she'odilam she'ein Elohim klum. I have to show them that their God is nothing. What's the motive? The final question, because this is the Chag of four questions. So the final question is the name Pesach. The name Pesach, as we know, did not come up in the Torah. Chag of Pesach is really called Chag Aviv. Pesach was the name that Chazal gave it. Why should Pesachti Abateim? Because they passed over the homes. There were 10 makos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu passing over the home of Klai Yisrael by Makos B'chayrus was one part of one maka. So it was. It was part of a maka. It wasn't a total maka. So for that we call, because one incident happened over the last maka, so now we call the whole Chag is called Asher Pasach Pesach. What's the name? What's so important about the name? You want to call Chag a maka, okay? Call Chag a geula. Chag Pesach, because Asher Pasach the Abatein, because one part of that Chag, the many parts to many of the makas that happened. So why is so profound about this name? What's the revelation behind this name that says a Shepasakti Abatem, they passed over the homes, and therefore we're going to call the Chag Pesach? What's the meaning behind that? Event many years ago, the Rav Shem Shaphol Hirsch, as we know, lived in very, very challenging times in Germany. He lived in a challenging time in a challenging place, because in the 19th century in Germany was the birth and the evolutionary growth and development of the Reform movement. And as we heard, as we know, stood strong, stalwart against the inroads that the reform movement was making, both in his speeches, both in his writings, both in college campuses. That was his mission. And the story has it, it's brought down in the biography about him, the story has it that in 1 year he stood up by Pesach Seder night and he said to his children, "If you ever make me choose between you and God, I'm choosing God." It's a powerful zug. "But if ever you make me false up, if you think that you can choose a different path of life," again, the Reform movement was very strong. It swayed many, many from homes. Many B'nai Torah were swayed from it. "If you think that you're going to put me in a corner and I'm going to have to capitulate and give in because I want to choose you, it's not happening." Say it tonight. I was reading this story and very struck by the profundity of his words, and the power of his words, to tell it to a child. But I was wondering, why Pesach night? Why would there not be a message to say Rosh Hashanah? Even Yom Kippur? Why Pesach? What's the theme behind Pesach that I'm going to choose God over you? We all understand that the value of the Jewish home, the home is not just where people live. The home is not where people just go home, have supper, and go to sleep. But the Jewish home, and any home, is where values are incubated and developed. The home is where the next generation is hewed and honed. And without understanding what the value of the Jewish home is, we don't understand really what Chag HaPesach is. When Moshe Ben was negotiating with Paro, and he said, Paro said to him, "Who's going to leave Egypt?" And Moshe famously said, "And Paro said, "No. What are you the children for? Why are you the kinder for? You want the adults to serve? You want adults to offer sacrifices? I understand. But why are you bringing the children?" To which the Netziv says, that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Paro, and says the Netziv, "Because as Yidden we know that we're not chagig, there is no chag without children." Now on a practical level, being true, we all know that there's no greater vacation when the kids are not there, right? You all go away on vacation trips. We don't want to take them. Now you're telling me, "Oh no, we're going to leave Mitzrayim. We want to go on a trip. We want to celebrate. But we can't. There is no chag without the children." Doesn't mean only because of the family time, because of the fun time. It means because we understand that the value of a chag, the purpose of a chag in a Jewish home, is not just celebrating an event. But if I cannot inculcate my children with it, if I cannot bring that home to my family, if I cannot make my children understand that the purpose why we're serving Hashem is as important to me, and it must be important to you as well, then that's not a chag. A chag that is celebrated as an individual Jew away from your children, not engaged in the next generation, doesn't not call the chag, says Netziv. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Paro. Maybe for you in your world, it's just about serving a God. But for us, it's teaching our children. It's educating the next generation what it means to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Hashem wanted to redeem Klal Yisrael, so we know that He made the entire path of the 10 plagues, the entire future of B'nai Yisrael contingent on this one thing, on the Jewish home. He said, "If this home is not going to be established as a Jewish home, then you're not coming with me. If you're not willing to nourish this home and nurture this home with the values of Yiddishkeit, the values of Torah, then we have no relationship, then we have no deal." Well, B'nai Yisrael was willing and wanting, but they didn't necessarily know what it means. They didn't know what it means. How do you, what does it mean? They didn't live a Jewish life. Many of them were Avodah Zarah. Many of them were engaged in other behaviors. They didn't know what it means to step up into the plate and connect with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. What does it mean practically? How does a Jew show that commitment? What does a Jew need to do to have a home which is a Jewish home that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from us? And I think the idea is that Kodesh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe that the true value of a Jewish home is being able to stand up to the values of society which are antithetical to our Torah values. The ability to stand up in your home and say that yes and this no. The ability to slaughter the God of the culture, whatever it may be, that defines a Jewish home. If you cannot put that line in the sand for your children, if we cannot say that idea, that value, that behavior, that action does not belong in our home, then we don't have a relationship. That's a Jewish home. That the values are fundamental and foundational to who we are as a people, that our home represents that. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked for Moshe Rabbeinu to take the Seh and to slaughter the Seh of its Egyptians, it was because if we are unwilling to take that Egyptian God, which has been so part and parcel of the history of the journey and the experience of the Jewish people in Egypt for the last 200 years. This is who they've been over, for sure, last 100 and something years. Where after the Shvatim were Nifter, they got engaged and got involved. This is what they knew. They have never seen or heard of God, of the Ribono Shel Olam, of the Elokei Yisrael, for hundreds of years. Moshe said, Ma Shemecha, what am I going to say to them when they ask me who you are? Because Rochu said, now the time has come. Now we're up against, now it's an Ela time. Let's see if you're willing to make that commitment. If you're willing to take the God of the culture and slaughter it because it doesn't go with our values, then we have a deal. If you're willing to make that commitment, then we have a relationship. But if not, then you can't come with me. Chag HaPesach means, and this, by the way, I'm sorry, this is why Kosh Baruch Hu specifically said, you put the Mizdam on the inside of the home. It wasn't a message for Kosh Baruch Hu. It was a message for us. Taking that dam of the Seh, Elohei Mitzrim, and say, this no longer has any value to us. This no longer means anything to us. The message on the doorpost wasn't for Kosh Baruch Hu, and it wasn't Achei. The message on the doorpost was for us and for our family. And say, look, this is a Jewish home. This is where Klal Yisrael lives. This is a home that's willing to sacrifice and stand up against the values of culture which don't fit in, which don't connect with our personal values. Kosh Baruch Hu said, Pasachti, if I can skip over your homes, if I can't skip over your home, we don't have a relationship. The reason why we call Pesach Pesach is because in essence, the entire Yetzias Mitzrayim, the entire Geula, was contingent on this one thing. Everything Kosh Baruch Hu did, what he did for us, it was an amazing sound and light show. It was an amazing performance. Everything, all the nine markers that came prior, was Kosh Baruch Hu did for us to the Egyptians. One thing he wanted from us, and the entire history of the Jewish people was contingent on it. If we can stand up to the plate and perform this one act and show our commitment to Kosh Baruch Hu, then we have a deal. If now we're out. Asher pesachti al bateyem, says Chazal, it's called Chag HaPesach, because without that, there is no Chag. Because without the next generation, there is no Chag. And if we cannot make that commitment, we don't have Yom Tov. And that's why I call Chag HaPesach. On a practical level, 100%, it makes no sense. There's no reason to call the entire Yom Tov after one part of one Makkah. But the essence of what that deed expressed, what that level of commitment expressed, to us and to every home, that's why it's so valuable. So when we celebrate Chag Pesach, we're not just celebrating the Yetzias Mitzrayim Kosh Baruch Hu did for us, we're really celebrating, commemorating, and valuing the commitment that we made to Kosh Baruch Hu. That's the essence of Chag Pesach. And I think this is why Rav Hirsch stood up on Pesach night and made that statement which he made. Because he understood, yes, Rosh Hashanah for coronating Kosh Baruch Hu, we get it. And Yom Kippur is asking Mechila from Kosh Baruch Hu, we get it. But if you want to understand what is the one time of year where we as Jews express our commitment to Kosh Baruch Hu generational, not just as individuals we coronate Hashem, not just as individuals we say Hashamnu Baganu, but as a family, as a generation to generation, we pass on this Messiah, we understand, we imbue in our children that this is who we are, this is what defines us, and anything less than this is unworthy of a redemption from Hashem. Until we are able to pass that on, then we don't have a true geula. And this is what Rav Hirsch was telling his children on Pesach night. Because this is where we stand, because that's what Chag HaPesach was. If you make me choose between the gods of Egypt and you, I'm choosing my God. If you make me choose between your value, which you want to adopt yourself, and my Kosh Baruch Hu, it's a Kosh Baruch Hu because that was our commitment to him thousands of years ago. I'm not creating anything new. I'm recognizing and continuing that commitment which we made to Kosh Baruch Hu thousands of years ago. And this is what the mezuzah represents. Mezuzah represents when a person puts his mezuzah, a bite we do it on the outside, not like the dam. But you walk into a home and there's a mezuzah by the front door. The message to us is that anything that we might have picked up or seen or engaged in the street that's not roy to enter into my home stops here. That's what the mezuzah is. When we leave our home and we take the message of the mezuzah with us, like Klai Yisrael put the dam on the mezuzahs of Mitzrayim, the house of Mitzrayim, the message was, this is a Yiddish home, this is a Jewish home, that the values of the home define who we are, not just when we're in the four walls, but no matter where we go, what's Torahidic comes with us, what's not Torahidic stays outside. That's the message of a Jewish home. That's the message of the mezuzah. And that's why we put the mezuzah on the doorpost, to commemorate the dam. What was the commemoration of the dam? The values of what it represents, the Jewish home, the commitment of Klai Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the zechus of the Gulas Mitzrayim came from that. Now we all know that these ideas are very valuable and important, but we know that chinuch can sometimes be challenging. Sometimes habits, it's ups and downs. They tell over that one time there's a fellow who was once walking in a supermarket, a bit of an educator, and he's walking and he's watching this woman shopping, and in the car she had her 2 or 3 year old daughter. And of course, every time the daughter passed something she wanted, she'd cry and she'd yell and she'd give me the candies and I want this and I want your balloon, I want the balloon. And every time she kept walking and crying, the mother would say, "It's okay, Emily, soon we'll be home soon, Emily, don't worry about it, everything will be okay." And then she goes a little vital, and the child is crying, wants something else. And she says, "Don't worry, Emily, we're going to be home soon. We're going to be home soon, take a nap." And the man was so intrigued by this patience and the love that the mother was giving, he couldn't help but come approach her. He said, "Ma'am, you don't mind if I'm asking, I'm a teacher, I'm an educator. It's really amazing the amount of patience you have for your daughter, Emily." She goes, "No, my daughter's Kathy, I'm Emily." The idea of the ability to really connect with our children, it's not always easy. And we talk about imbuing values into them. While it's very valuable and very important, but you have to know that that doesn't happen by itself. There is chinuch that goes into that. There is an education process that is required to make that successful. Of course, we all have those desires and wants that we should have the home, which is a Torahidic home, and has the values that we've always inspired for. We want our children to live like that. But there's ways to make that happen in our home. And while obviously there's much, much written about chinuch, I wanted to focus just simply tonight on three things. Three ideas which can help translate some of these goals into practical application and ability to connect with our children in a healthy way. I call them the three C's. It makes it easy to remember. This first C is calm. The second C is consistency. And the third is communication. You talk about what it means, calmness. So imagine yourself, we've all known into the scenarios, you're rushing to the airport, you're running late, you got the kids crying, the luggage is flying out of the trunk, and of course you get stuck in traffic. And you're a mess, and you're yelling, and the husband's yelling, and everyone's screaming, the kids start crying, and you're trying to hold on to every last bit of energy that you can just to keep your own internal calm, and you're losing it. Traffic light by traffic light, minute by minute, you're watching the flight almost take off in front of your eyes, and you're going crazy, and you're just not calm. You don't have that internal calm. Now imagine another scenario. You're on vacation with your family, and it's relaxed, and there's no stress, and there's no homework, and there's no pressure, and everyone's happy, there's no work, everyone is there, and everyone is present. And you have this tremendous internal calm. And you have so much patience for your children. That distinction of between the calm and the upheaval, between the tension and the calmness, is what our children feel in our own homes when there is no calm. When there's stress and there's yelling and there's pressure. If that's how we feel as adults, when internally we are struggling with our own peace of mind because we're stressed about something happening, how do our children feel when the house is not calm, when there's yelling going on, when there's pressure being put? Why is this not happy? Why don't we take it? That sets off inside of people an inability to have a sense of calm. And when people don't feel calm, A, we make wrong decisions because we're all fatumot, we're all confused inside. And it also takes away a strong sense of self when we don't have that calm, because we don't really understand who we are, because we're not sure what we should be doing. And when a person doesn't have that sense of calm, we can't develop a strong sense of ourself. So the first thing is calm. What it means to try to nurture and develop a home, where, again, I've been there and we're still there. We get it. We understand that the challenges of having a houseful of children and one after another, and there's pressures, and there's parnasa pressures, and there's children pressures, and there's stress, and things happen. We get it. That's why we're talking about it. We're talking about it because we understand the challenges of it. We're talking about it because we have to be able to admit and recognize that it's a challenge. And to say that we all have that goal to try to keep a certain sense of calm in the home that will give a healthy, nurturing atmosphere to our children where they will feel calm. And they'll have much more sense of self with that calmness. The second C we said is consistency. And consistency is, it gives a value to people that understand who they are and what comes next. You know, I've dealt with a number of situations, especially with teenagers, where there are a lot of double standards in the home. Sometimes the father has one approach, the mother has another approach. An extreme example I was once dealing with was a where the mother was very firm, the father was not firm at all. And the kid said, like, no matter what I do, I'm going to mess up. Right? If one parent is very calm, the other one is very intense, the kid said, I don't know what's appropriate behavior. I like the calm, but my other parent is always intense. Like, am I supposed to be a high-pitched person? Am I supposed to be an intense person? What's right? What's wrong? I don't understand what I should be doing. When there's a lack of consistency in the home, when there's inability for a child to say, this is what's expected from me, again, it takes away, eats away from the inner core of who we are as people. The self-esteem is never nurtured properly because we don't get a chance to identify ourselves properly because we don't know what's right and what's wrong. You know, in education, one of the most important things that you can have in a school is consistency of staff. This has been proven. When children can say to their siblings, oh, did you have so-and-so? Or you know, oh, you're going to have that teacher. Oh, this is what they're like. When there's consistency in a school, when there's a consistency in the staff, then the kids feel comfortable. It makes them feel present. It makes them feel understanding. There's no what's coming next question mark in their mind. When at home, when the children don't have a consistent set of values, a consistent set of behaviors, they don't understand what's supposed to come next. And therefore, they don't know how they should perform. And if they see that parents are always performing in different ways, that trains our children to always perform in different ways. And they'll begin to do what works for them at that time. Just like you did one way sometimes, and your mother, mommy did one way, and Tati did another way. So I'll do my way, because there is no consistency. There is no true values. In order to educate our children with a true sense of values, that we have to give a sense of consistency. And this is something, obviously, the parents have to work out together within themselves, to understand what are their core values and to be on the same page, both in the messages that we articulate to our children, the messages that our children pick up in the home, both in our hashkafas, both in our values, and both in our behaviors. Because these are the important core issues of consistency that develops the self-esteem. You know, Rabbi Dr. Tversky Zichron Levracha wrote, I think, 60 books. And he once told somebody, he said, I really just wrote one book 60 different ways. All about self-esteem. Because ultimately, that's probably the biggest challenge or emotional deficiency that you find about people, within people, that people just lack a certain sense of self, a sense of value, which we'll talk about more in a minute. And a lot of that comes because we don't know, if we're not defined clearly, then we don't understand who we are supposed to be. If I don't know who I'm supposed to be, how can I feel good about myself? I don't understand who I am. One parent acts one way, another parent acts another way. I don't know what that means. Where does that put me? What does it do for me? And therefore, the second C is a sense of consistency, the ability to have a path, a mahalach, like it says back in Ben Sarah Mersh, Eno Shome B'Koleinu, right? He didn't listen to our voice. B'Koleinu means that the both parents, if both parents are not saying the same thing, why are you blaming the kid? And then Shemei B'Koleinu means it's only a tie-in on the kid if both parents were consistent in the message. And the kid have no claim or no response why they did something different or deviant from the family. Because I got mixed messages, so I did what I wanted to do. Everything is mixed up here anyway. So I make my choice. You make your choices. I make my choices. That takes away from a direction of a child. Last and not uncommon is communication. And we know that communication is the buzzword of our generation. It's indeed a very, very important word. I remember the first time someone said it to me many years ago. I was having an argument with my father about something, and one of my uncles was present. He says, "You guys need to learn to communicate better." So I didn't communicate. I'm talking to the man, like, "What do you mean communicate?" Like, I didn't understand what it meant at that time. And over the years, you understand, you begin to realize that there's a skill to communication. So there's a couple of things, but I want to focus on just two primary points. The first thing is that a child, as people, but specifically children, need to be seen. Children need to feel they're seen by their parents. What does that mean? We see our children all the time. So it's a very simple example. A kid walks into the kitchen one morning, it's more particularly if you have daughters. "Oh, you look so cute." Mother could say, "I love the way you brush your hair. I love the dress on you. You look great." Father could say something to the son. Mother could say something to the son. When we talk about the children's look, when we talk about the children's accomplishment, we're not talking about the person. We're not seeing that person behind the clothing, behind the accomplishment. We're noticing the accomplishment, which is very nice. That's secondary to seeing the child. It's secondary to saying to a child, "How are you? Nice to see you. I missed you." When the children hear that message over and over again, it's about them on a personal level. It's about them as who they are as an individual. It's about them who they are as a person. That's seeing the person. When you see what they do or what they look like, you're not seeing the person. And therefore, the child is being taught that as an individual, they don't have much value. Their value can only come as great as they perform or as great as they look. And that's unfortunately not. And that's simply not true. It's an unfortunate message to send to a child. And therefore, the first idea of communication is to communicate to the child that we love our children because they are just human beings and they are children. Nothing beyond that. You want them to act good? This is a great way to make sure that happens. Because when children feel that they're valued to their parents by being seen by their parents, then they want to do good because they like to be seen in a healthy way, in a positive way. Of course, you should compliment the good things they've done and how they look. But that's a secondary notion, a secondary stage before the past, after we see the child. A second sense of that is when we ignore our children when they're kvetching to us. You know, children, by the time they're a couple of months old, maybe a year, they learn the trick very, very quickly. They learn how to go from a mommy or tati or daddy to a whine, to a kvetch, because they've learned, we train them, that they're not going to get the response the first, second, or third time. We're not going to respond to them. When do we start responding to them? When they start whining and kvetching. Ignoring a child is never, ever a healthy thing. Not ignoring does not mean you have to give in to them or let them interrupt your conversation or let them stop you from your task. You can just as easily say to the child, "I see you, Tatala. I see you, Mamala. I see you, honey. I see you, sweetheart. I'm busy right now. I'm talking right now. Give me a few minutes and I'll talk to you. I'll speak to you. I'll see what you want." The child needs to be learned, to be taught. Child needs to learn that it's okay that they have wait and have patience for the mommy and for the mother and father, but the child must feel that they are being recognized and seen by their parent. Ignoring a child is never a good thing to do because that means we're not valued. That means we're not being seen by our parents. I remember Rav Noach Olerich, Shlita, once told us, he said that if you let a child cry, this is debated in a lot of ways, but if you let a child cry at night, he held it's like a shtickle midas rois. Again, I'm not saying that everyone agrees with necessarily, but the concept is that if we don't recognize our children, if we don't connect with them, if we don't communicate with them, say to them, "I hear you, I see you, I know you want me, just give me a few minutes, I'm talking now, you have to wait, I'm busy now, you may have to wait, I'll get back to you," and we better be careful and sure that it doesn't take forever. We have to be obviously very careful to get back to them properly, because then you don't want to teach a child to lie. Because if you don't get back to them, if you make a commitment to something, you don't keep it, we're simply teaching our children to lie. The other thing is, you know, in general, we always talk about, we have the Kol Chadibur amongst Klal Yisrael, obviously, is a very valuable thing. It's what defines humans. And we have so many emphasis of halachas and mitzvahs and isurim when it comes to our koyach hadibur, whether it's lashon hara, or speaking nicely, or not speaking words that are inappropriate, or not saying a sheker. Not, there's so much that we talk about by how we speak. Communication is our koyach as humans. It's what defines us. It's what allows us to interact with people. So if we're not communicating properly to people, then we're missing the whole essence of what it means to have human communication. This is true whether it's with our children, whether it's true with our spouses, but the ability to communicate. Now, one of the challenges of communicating, we don't always understand what we want ourselves from ourselves. We get into a mode or a mood, we're in a place, we're in a mindset, we're confused, we're upset, we're rushed, so we lash out, we say something, and sometimes it's better to say, give me a few minutes, I need to gather my own thoughts, I can't respond to that right away. Communicating to the person lets them know where you're holding. You know, we talk about down the kavz achus. Yes, should the person be judging the kavz achus 100%? That's a whole different discussion. But the essence is that we also have to have the ability to communicate to the people that we are in contact with, and especially the ones of our family, the ones that we love the most and care for the most. This is how we're able to develop a relationship. When we communicate with them, something that you're happy with and something that you're bothered by, but communicate. And that breaks down, because otherwise people don't know what you're thinking, what you're feeling. That leaves them in limbo. That leaves them in a place where they don't understand what's supposed to be happening. I think that these values and these ideas represent on some level what we're talking about, being able to create a Torah home based on Torah values. If we're able to bring a sense of calm, then children want to live in a calm home. They want to absorb the values of the home. If there's consistency in our message of who we are, so of course children get the message when they're home, they understand what's expected from them. They know what the true Torah values are. And of course, if we communicate them properly in an appropriate way, then obviously they're going to hear the message loud and clear. I think this is an important message for Pesach as not just the Chag of Yetzias Mitzrayim on the national level, but it's also a certain element of Geula for all of ourselves. As we made that commitment to Kadosh Baruch Hu, to be able to establish a home, in that zechus, we're able to have the true Geula. We should be zecha to continue that Geula in our homes, Abiyat Mashiach.